And due to the importance of the subject matter, our guests Jerry Corsi and Craig Smith, authors of Black Gold Stranglehold, will stick around for another hour and take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. You know, every once in a while, Jerry and Craig, when I travel, I try to read a good book on plane because to me, 2 hours, 3 hours, let's get something done. I hate idle time. Black Gold Stranglehold is the kind of book that you don't want to waste your time not reading it. And it's a perfect opportunity for people, too, if they're traveling, if they're in hotels, if they're just staying at home, because the message is very important. And I think one thing it does, which is very interesting, in spite of the problems we're having, it kind of makes you feel good that it's not all doom and gloom at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah, there are answers and there are practical solutions. I mean, this is probably one of the most fixable issues that this country has ever faced. And that's, we got excited as we got towards the end of the book, drawing our conclusions and coming up with, it was almost like a light bulb went off one day when we were working on it. It's like, hey, this can be fixed. This is not the end of the world. I mean, quite to the contrary, we could lead the world in this area if we really got the will to do so.
Absolutely. Let's go back to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our trucker hotline, our fuel line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello, everybody. And yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to tell you that due to the fuel increases, in price, I'm losing about $600 a week right now.
Right out of your pocket?
Right out of my pocket.
Now, how long can you keep going at that rate?
Well, there's two reasons for going. One is the family and, you know.
Sure.
Second is the fact, and this is the reason why we don't pull over, is the fact that we understand that we are very much needed and we don't want to create any more problems. We want to be part of the solution. And it's just like tightening the belt a little bit and, you know, going with the flow.
Okay. You know, I admire what you're doing, but Jerry and Craig, why should he have to make the sacrifice? Why don't the big oil companies drop their prices a little bit more?
Well, George, this is exactly the point. And the profits that are being made are going to be unconscionable unless the oil companies do get more supply, meaning building more refineries, because that's the blockage. With even more crude oil on the market right now today, it's impossible with the refineries operating at 96-97% capacity today to get more gasoline or heating oil into the market.
Yeah, but tomorrow Exxon will report record profits, probably up 60-80%. I mean, that's sinful.
Well, but let me, you know, I don't want to defend their actions, but we need to keep this in perspective. If we go back to 1998, when oil was $10 a barrel, the profits weren't anywhere near what they are today. And there were many years that the oil companies lost huge amounts of money building infrastructure. So while it's probably excessive right now, if you were to track the S&P and track the profits of an average oil company, they very, very seldom kept up with the return from the S&P. Now, recently, that hasn't been the case, and that's why Jerry and I are advocating that these oil companies do take these record profits and reinvest them for the benefit of the future of the nation. But let's remember that there are many years when oil was $10, $12 a barrel that these guys took it in the shorts. And now they're recuperating some of those losses.
But they still made money, didn't they? I mean, what's the salary of the president of BP?
Well, and of course, everybody would agree with you on that, George, that corporate America has excessive salaries, everybody from the dot-coms to the chip makers to the oil companies. And that should be changed, especially when you hear a man like this that has to dig in
his
pocket.
He's losing $600 a week.
$31,200 a year he has to dig into his pocket to keep his job. That's not right.
No.
And I want to pick up, this gentleman also said that he felt an obligation, responsibility. He wanted to keep America moving.
He wants to be part of the solution.
Well,
right?
The oil companies have got to take that same thinking. The oil companies have to come forward and be part of the solution. Having record profits, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, is not going to sit with the American people. when people like this gentleman driving his truck are having to make sacrifices to keep America going.
Are we taxing people too much, too, with a gallon of gasoline? And are we using that tax dollar effectively?
Absolutely, we're taxing too much. We do not have an energy policy in the United States. We have got a hodgepodge of systems and structures that don't really make any sense. All the refineries in the Gulf, when a hurricane comes through, destroying the capacity and putting our refineries offline. We do not have any idea how much oil we could find in the United States if we went offshore.
Sure.
We went into Alaska. If we encourage, as we say in the book with seven steps of solutions, incentive programs, taxes aimed at getting refineries online and drilling deeper. We do not need to burden the American people any further.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
My name is Michelle, and I'm a truck driver also, me and my husband, and we're down in southern Texas, and I had some comments I want to make, but my question was, I haven't heard anybody talk about hot fuel, and I'm not talking about stolen fuel. I'm talking about the temperature of the fuel. It's supposed to come to the stations at 70 degrees, and a lot of times it doesn't. And we've gotten fuel and not got the mileage that we're supposed to get, and come to find out the temperature of the fuel was too hot, so you don't get the BTUs don't match up. So instead of getting like 6 miles, you'll get 3 miles.
Is that done on purpose, Michelle?
Yes, it is. And the stations know it. They've got temperatures in the pumps themselves, and when the tanker brings it in and puts, you know, fills it up, it logs. They've got a system, you know, computer system, so it logs.
Okay,
everything.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and they're not only doing it on diesel, they're doing it on, you know, regular gasoline also. So when people aren't getting, you know, their fuel mileage that they're supposed to, it's because they've gotten hot fuel now. The stations are making a lot more money off of that fuel by, you know.
Well, how do they warm it up?
They don't leave it and let it cool and bring it straight out from the, I guess, the refinery or the gas plant. They bring it straight out, and the temperature's too hot because they're.
I've never heard this. Have you?
I haven't either. I know maybe Jerry has, but I don't understand the profit motive, because they heat the oil to crack it into the distillate.
It lowers your miles per gallon, which means you end up using more fuel.
Well, the only thing I can figure is that if they had to keep it at 70 degrees, they would have to refrigerate the tankers going through the desert and
probably,
stuff, and maybe that
probably.
Would cost extra money, and they're saving that money in transportation. But
say they bring 10,000 gallons out, you know, to the station.
All right.
Okay, they're telling you, and they're supposed to be repaying the taxes on 10,000 gallons. Well, in reality, they're charging people and gaining the taxes on 13,000 or 14,000 gallons. You see, but they're only shipping out 10,000 gallons.
Well, now that's something totally different, yeah. I guess.
I think that's fraud.
That's fraud.
And I think if that's reported to your state authorities, and the Bureau of Weights and Measurement can come out and calibrate those pumps. And
yes,
if that's
they do that, but they've already sold all of the fuel. So the consumers that gotten the fuel and thought that they paid for that much gallons of fuel is not getting that many gallons of fuel.
So you're saying when you pump, you're expecting a certain amount of gallons, and you're not getting that.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, no, that's fraud.
If you do a search on Google for hot fuel, it'll explain everything a lot better than
I haven't heard that.
Jerry?
We'll look into it. I think it's a very good question, a very good point, and I think it's something we will look into.
Coming directly from a truck driver, who knows?
It's a very, very good point.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, this is Edward. I'm calling from Hinckley, California.
Hello, Edward.
Near Barstow. I'm not real sympathetic with the oil companies and the gasoline purveyors, because the prices right now in this country are obscene. This is the issue. In other words, all of these other solutions, boycotts and everything else, can work. But the first thing that needs to happen is the attention of the government and the attention of the oil companies needs to be gotten. And the most interesting question that has not been asked is, why in the world has this not been made an issue of national security? Think of the trillions of dollars that are now going to the Chinese government and that are now enriching the oil companies that are not going into our economy. And not a single politician, not a single leader has said to the American people, we empower you. We empower you. We lead. We're going to help. No help has come. No help has come. And these people aren't asking the question, why is this not a national security issue? Can you imagine?
And you're right. It could be huge right now.
Think of all the money that has been taken away from health care, from all the chain stores, from all the businesses in each individual city, from truckers who couldn't go to barbecues. Think of all this. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of truckers out there listening to us in the middle of the night right now. You're empowered. Can you imagine FDR, and this thing that happened with 9/11, we were all told to go shopping. Don't worry. You're not empowered. Don't worry about anything. We'll take care of you. Go shopping. Just go on about your business. This is what we've been told. We've been disempowered and disemboweled when we are the presidents of ourselves. We are presidents of what we do, and it's time for us to go. We dictate now to the oil companies and the government what we want. We want lower oil prices, and then we can go on to these other solutions. We want to be able to take care of our families, buy food, and do the things we're normally able to do that we can't because we're spending money. You know, fully 30% of the oil that is produced in this country and that is imported in this country is going to China. It's been displaced from that input, and it's being sent to China because of their so-called demand for it, because of their boom. And that has caused a false demand. There's not more use so much as there is less available to produce in this country. It's going overseas.
Why is it, Jerry? And thanks for your comments. And he's right.
Yes, he's got an excellent point, and we've talked about this extensively in the book, to say there's a transfer of wealth going on from the United States when 60% of our oil is imported, when we're dependent on foreign countries. And it's even funding terrorism when countries like Iran benefit from the rise in world oil prices.
Even Saudi Arabia. Supposed to be our friends, where most of the hijackers came from.
And Wahhabism is one of the most virulent strains of radical Islam that Saudi Arabia sponsors.
Look, if oil wasn't as big as it was, the Bin Laden family wouldn't have been able to get all that money in their construction, and Osama bin Laden wouldn't have gotten all his money from his family to do what he did.
You know, we talk about it in the chapter, the diminishing petrodollar, and how many billions upon billions of dollars are being transferred from this country into foreign countries, and the potential threats that will pose in the future. We know that the Saudis held a telethon to raise $200 million to help support terrorism, suicide bombing families and Palestinians, and it's crazy that we're stripping that wealth out of America and transferring it into the hands of foreigners that may not have our best interest in the future in their minds.
And we've also undermined our currency in many ways by completely disassociating from the gold standard. We talk at length about how the Islamic countries are going back to the gold dinar and are trying to get oil traded in the gold dinar, which again is a national security threat to the United States that most Americans aren't even aware of.
True.
And we're arguing that we should at least have a foreign trade currency that is backed by the dollar. We should look at establishing one and take it very seriously, because a free-floating dollar, as we're having right now, is an invitation to have a form of inflation going on that most Americans aren't even aware is happening.
Was it true that Saddam Hussein was going to switch from American dollars to euros, and that could be one of the reasons why he was ousted?
I believe that's part of it, and I also believe that, and I think this is documentable, And Jerry and I talk about it in the book, that Osama bin Laden's attack on the World Trade Center was clearly aimed at the bullseye of the heart of American finance. I mean, Wall Street evaporated, George. Mm-hmm. It was non-existent for 5 days. You couldn't buy or sell a stock. We lost 1 million jobs right after 9/11. I mean, our travel industry went downhill. And so Osama bin Laden, in his writings to the American people in his letters of November 2004, said he is coming after us financially because we have stripped the wealth out of the Middle East in the form of oil and traded for our worthless U.S. dollars. And I don't think that attack's going to stop anytime soon.
Craig, you're chairman of board of an investment company, a big one, Swiss American Trading Corporation. How come they never released after 9/11? How come they never released who made money in those short sales of stock?
You know, I don't know. There's a lot of questions that I think the SEC, considering all the scandals that they were uncovering with the Delphi and Enron and all these mm-hmm. others, they seem to neglect to look at all the trading that went on September 10th, 11th, and 12th. And I don't have any hard evidence
I can
bring to the table to you tonight, George, but I think there was a tremendous amount of suspicious activity that went on during that whole time period, and it should be investigated.
Sure. And maybe it has. Maybe they already know who did it.
And George, you know the key element of the discussion of terrorism is terrorists are highly intelligent, and they recognize that they're fighting an economic war against the United States.
They're so smart, Jerry, they use dumb young kids to blow themselves up so they can do what they need to do. That's how smart they are.
That's right. And the increase in the price of oil and the weakening of the American economy with the transfer of the money going into the Persian Gulf states is a plan that Americans ought to be aware of. It's at our national security, because this is a weakening of the United States that we could reverse if we went to a policy of the United States being more oil independent. That's why in Black Gold Stranglehold, we discuss terrorism at such length and say that there's an economic plan afoot here to weaken the United States by increasing unreasonably the price of oil.
You know what confuses me, too? We're coming up to a break, and then we've got the rest of the calls. In the United Arab Emirates, in Dubai, they are spending billions of dollars just to create islands, false islands in the sea, to allow rich people to go and have some fun. This is a Middle Eastern area. Aren't they concerned about terrorists trying to change that? No, nothing's ever going to happen there.
Yeah, and Dubai just opened up their own gold exchange, which we find interesting. It falls along these lines of these foreign countries, these Arab countries moving back to a hard currency.
It's amazing. We'll be back with final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, it'll be superstitions. Then, of course, we lead into Friday, where we'll have those spooky open lines as we start doing a preview of Halloween. Don't forget, Art Bell will do his Ghost to Ghost show on Monday, and he's getting ready for that. Send him emails of some of your favorite ghost stories with the phone number so Art can get back to you and see if he's going to use you on the program Monday on Ghost to Ghost, a tradition here on Coast to Coast. Now, we'll be back in a moment with our two guests and the rest of your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. The rest of your phone calls, I want to thank also Jerry Corsi and Craig Smith for staying an extra hour. We started an hour early with them. Did a little flip-flop. Let's also talk, before we go to the phone calls, very quickly, the seven-step solution that you believe will end American dependence on foreign oil. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, in the seven steps, we tried to make them as simple as possible so people could get their arms around them and actually get involved with the steps. First, we believe in promoting scientific research to investigate the alternative theories that are out there right now, George. We believe once scientists actually make a concerted effort to look at the theories that are out there, they're going to find a lot of opportunities that maybe they never thought about before. We believe in expediting offshore leases, and also encouraging oil exploration in Alaska, mm-hmm. like in the Anwar. where we know that the U.S. Geological Survey has shown 10.3 billion barrels of recoverable reserves. There may be 10 times that. We don't know. But that's a million five a day.
Yeah.
That will take pressure off having to go to foreign entities. We want to provide, and I know some people are going to go, what? But we want to provide some tax credits for deep drilling oil exploration.
What?
That's what I figured everybody would say. But we're talking about deep drilling oil exploration. It costs,
why give them credits? They got enough money.
Well, but here's the point. It costs billions of dollars to do it, and there is going to be some risk. Now, if they're making money, then they should pay taxes. If they hit some areas that maybe they wouldn't take chances otherwise if there weren't any, you know.
So you're saying there was an incentive for the risk.
Exactly. And look, I think the marketplace is going to make oil companies compliant, for lack of a better term, George. I don't think the oil companies are going to turn their back on the public and say, you know, the heck with you, we're going to make our money. I think
they've done it so far.
I think they're listening now, though. I think now that you've got Denny Hassert talking about it and programs like yours talking about it, and I hear the anger and the frustration in the callers' voices, those are potential customers. You can only upset your customers and squeeze them so long before they rebel. And I think
if we do three major things in this country, I'm telling you, Americans, most Americans would be so ecstatic. They'd be jumping for joy. Their lives would change overnight. One would be, and they're talking about this now, revamping entirely the income tax code. Just maybe even doing away with it, going to some kind of nominal use tax where people can have the bulk of their money and spend it the way they want to.
Sure.
I mean, that would be dramatic for them. Some Republican senators out of South Carolina are even recommending not even having to file anything. I mean, that would be dramatic. Change this system where the price of fuel is reasonable. I don't think anybody, you know, we talk about alternative free energy. I don't think anybody is going to argue about paying something for fuel as long as it's fair, so they're not strapped every month. And then if we can truly do something about terrorism, and part of that will go away if we don't have to rely on some of these governments and countries that are supporting the terrorism, we kind of just get out of there. Now, we will always need a strong defense, because honestly, nowadays, I don't trust any of these other countries anymore. You know, I don't know what they're up to. And I think we need to take a very aggressive posture to leaders who harbor terrorists.
I agree. And I think if there was one major area that Jerry and I saw that is a stranglehold that concerns both Jerry and I the most, is a stranglehold that countries have that clearly and openly support terrorism around the world, and we're fueling their ability to keep that terrorism going.
Yes.
That is a national security threat, George, that every single American should be concerned
about. And you don't need an army to do this.
That's true.
And that is another approach.
And George, we tried to write this so that it is easy to read, so that it's not require, you know, we took the numbers out, we made it simple, we explained the science.
It's not scientific, but it's knowledgeable science.
Because we wanted to empower the people who read this in order to have the tools they need to communicate to the oil companies and to Congress and the president the need to get a reasonable oil policy for America, a reasonable energy policy that will put in the hands of people reasonable prices for gasoline, oil, heating fuel, etc., so that we can have an economy that continues to grow and be strong.
You're both proponents of nuclear power. I'm petrified ever since Chernobyl. How do we get around that?
Nuclear power can be made to be safe. Every form of energy, anything we do, is going to have a risk to it. But there's something like 430 nuclear power plants operating worldwide today, and we've had one or two accidents in it. Now, the accidents can be dramatic, but we've had a nuclear energy system around the world now for 40 years or longer that has been commercialized and can be run effectively.
Can we get by, if we have a different way of getting oil, can we get by without all these nuclear power plants?
Yes, we can. And I still think that there's some reasons to have nuclear power advanced. Again, the idea that it's a multiple solution. It's kind of like attacking cancer. It's not just one solution, but there's multiple solutions that have to be implemented in a mix. Also, remember, Exxon Valdez, Chernobyl, these things stand out as dramatic in our minds. We don't think of the hundreds and hundreds of operations and plants that go on without problems and can be managed effectively and are managed effectively today, every day.
You know, just south of here, George, you have San Onofre. It's been operating very safely for well over 35 years
right now.
I live 50 miles from the Palo Verde nuclear plant outside of Phoenix, Arizona. We don't even think twice about it because it's got the technology has advanced so far over the last 40 years that we can really build things safe. As Jerry said, everything has a risk. I mean, getting in your car driving home tonight has a risk. Mm-hmm. But I think we can mitigate that risk substantially with the new technologies that are out there and provide good, clean, affordable energy as we move the technology along and the prices come down.
Let's go back to the phones now. Let's pick it up by going to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Ron.
Hey, Ron. Kansas. Good to have you with us.
I guess my question is directed at your guest.
Okay.
When I was growing up, I understood that the gas, the natural gas and the oil that came from our state had to be sold in another state. Is that still true, or is it?
I'm not aware of any restriction of that nature.
Yeah, years ago, because you had refineries, well over 300 plus, that were directly aligned to areas where the oil was being pulled out of the ground, sometimes you had these exchanges going on beyond the states, but once the refineries were consolidated and the infrastructure was pulled to certain areas like the Gulf, Louisiana, mm-hmm. Mississippi, I haven't heard of any of that happening over the last, you know, several years.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, appreciate you being on the program. Trucker Hotline, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello. He's not with us anymore.
Quiet truck.
He ran out of fuel. You never know. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good evening, George. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
My name is Charles. I'm calling from Virginia. This is perfect timing because yesterday on another talk show, the host took this article that he read to us at face value. And I first heard the article and I said, smokescreen. Yesterday in the Financial Times, they wrote an article stating that the reason why the price of oil per gallon, I mean, the price of the oil in the drum was so high is because the platform workers were on drugs, like drugs was just invented this past year. you need to read the article. It was in yesterday's Financial Times, and I heard this, and I said, "What? Well, that's ridiculous." You know, I love there the comments that you have.
All right. I think you both agree. That's ridiculous.
Yes. It's ridiculous. Blaming on the workers does not sound like a good solution.
One thing Voltaire once said about common sense. One thing about common sense is not very common.
No, not at all. Next up, west of the Rockies, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, this is Gary in Utah.
Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
I've just got a question about, you guys are talking about alternate fuel sources. What about making diesel fuel out of coal? So I'm from the area of Utah where we produce coal, and I was just curious. I've heard about this for the past 3 or 4 years.
Well, that can be done. As a matter of fact, in Illinois, I have a buddy of mine who was sitting at the airport. An old gentleman was sitting next to him and is building a coal plant to have gasoline.
Yeah, liquefied coal is becoming very, very advanced.
And he said $25 a barrel.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And I think that now that they've been able to clean up the coal and liquefy it, I think, once again, because the price has gone so high, George, it's going to open up a whole new arena of technologies that back when oil was $20 a barrel, just weren't cost effective.
Right.
Now that it's at $60 a barrel, it becomes way more cost effective. And I believe, as I said before, once the technology advances, the prices will come down as a natural course of the market.
And again, the creativity, the ability to innovate are one of the reasons that all these doom and gloom, the Malthusian thinkers, you know, the population is going to grow so fast, we're going to be out of food. Well, the Earth has been able to support, you know, billions of people and can support many more. We can grow, we can have effective economies. The stranglehold starts with the idea limitations we impose on ourselves, like that oil is fossil fuel. If we get rid of these ideas and begin looking effectively with a positive view to getting more energy into the market of a variety of kinds, we can bring the price down and we can solve the problems.
Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, this is Gary calling from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Hi, Gary. It's all yours.
Okay. Are you familiar with the newer, I say newer, anything from 96 on up, OBD2 vehicles where everything is hooked up and run by a computer, and if the vehicle fails inspection for any deviation from original manufacturer's specification, okay, you cannot change what's under the hood of that vehicle. And, in fact, anything with an oxygen sensor on it, you can't change.
True. Well, we've got that in Missouri, too, where they have emissions, and you've got to go through that.
It's all over, but it's leading up to my point here. All vehicles are set up to 14.7:1 air fuel ratio. Hey, that's right up there with global warming and fossil fuels. I have proven that gasoline can be turned into propane and that you can get over 100 miles per gallon on any vehicle without the computer.
I want your data.
Okay. It's so simple. What is the difference, if you look at it under a microscope, between propane and gasoline? It's all the same thing. It's the way the fuel is distributed. Now, the older systems, I went to the U.S. Patent Office when I first started researching this, and the first one I saw was bought out by Standard Oil of New Jersey in 1914. And this was a heater coil that went underneath the carburetor on a Model T Ford, and it could take petroleum straight out of the ground, and the car would get like 50 miles per gallon.
Wow. Well, and they have been known to buy off these patents
but they've been relegated to the status of little green men from Mars.
True.
Things that go bump in the night, and I've proven it. I can take gasoline, turn it to a clear dry vapor, and put a blower on this little gadget, and it feels just like air coming out of the hose. And light it on fire, and the flame starts out blue, then it turns yellow, then orange, then with a little black tip of carbon.
Jerry, how does someone like him get investment money to do what he says he can do?
Well, I think, you know, we're going to see more innovations coming on, and these kinds of ideas, sir, you should pursue it. Get yourself in the process of getting a patent. Get yourself in the process of finding others who agree and can fund whatever you need to get
somebody
the next step. Someone will do it. But again, as Craig said a minute ago, with oil at increasing prices, alternatives are going to be looked at, and yours may very well merit both being looked at and investment. So continue.
Jerry, I want to take a couple minutes, and we'll wrap up with a caller or two very quickly. President of Iran today, who's merely a figurehead for the mullahs, he was a terrorist in his own right, part of, I think, the embassy takeover back in the 70s, says that Israel should be wiped off the face of the map. Very dangerous for a guy like that to say that in light of the fact that we believe Iran is building its nuclear capability. What do you think the Israelis, I want you to make a prediction, what do you think the Israelis will do, because they take a very tough approach with people who make these kinds of threats, what are they going to do?
Israel is in the process right now, George, and it's a great question. Israel is contemplating that the world is going to abandon Israel, that the president of the United States is already politically weakened by Iraq and internal problems, the nomination of Harriet Myers. Israel is moving towards thinking it's going to have to solve the problem itself and launch a military strike against Iran. That's what's in the works. That's what's going to happen. Israel will set a date in 2006 beyond which they won't tolerate any more continued worthless negotiations. It won't go to the United Nations. The United Nations Security Council will be worthless. Russia's already indicated that they will not take seriously stopping Iran and its nuclear weapons
program.
Will
Russia get involved to stop Israel?
Yes. They'll try to block the whole issue from coming to the United Nations, and they will side with Syria and with Iran.
Are we on the brink of a third world war
if
all this happens?
We're on the brink of a war that could break into a third world war, because when Israel strikes Iran, they'll strike anywhere from 10 to 20 sites simultaneously. They'll do it with airplanes. They may use
conventional,
possibly some nuclear. The nuclear will be standing ready. We'll have to cooperate. We have troops in the area. But Israel will set a date, and I don't know what the date will be, but they'll set a date in 06 beyond which they will not go, and they'll have a strike because they'll feel abandoned. They can't tolerate to wake up one morning and have an atomic 9/11 over Tel Aviv.
Well, especially when the guy's saying he'll do it.
Well, that's exactly right, George. That statement today was so bold. They're feeling that they can get away with anything, and no one's going to stop them.
Yeah.
They're convinced that George Bush is completely weakened, that George Bush is powerless.
Is he?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
And has no resolve and no direction. This should have been addressed in March. It's when I thought it would have been addressed in March this year. That's what the administration said. Vice President Cheney was set on that path. President went over to Europe, sent Condoleezza Rice to Europe, comes back and says, we're going to work with the European to negotiate this. Said that's worthless. That's going to be more drawn out negotiations with sociopaths and psychopaths. When Ahmadinejad says that he's going to destroy Israel, wipe it off the face of the earth, he means it. Should be taken deadly seriously. They're pursuing the development of nuclear weapons in a clandestine fashion, and the Iranians will be happy to push the world to the brink of thermal nuclear war.
And what does China do with all this?
China's going to stand on the sidelines and hope the war doesn't involve them. China's going to play its own advantage. There's a billion Chinese. It's one of the things Ahmadinejad is also on the record, as well as Khomeini, saying there's a billion Islam believers. They can take 200 million losses. The mullahs think that they can get out of the country. They think that they can survive. They think they'll know when it's going
to
happen.
And they know where to go. They already have their escape route, don't they?
They've made themselves wealthy. They have vacation homes. They've got businesses.
Now, how many people are we talking about running Iran right now?
50.
That's 50 guys.
And probably there's one guy.
With a few billion in the bank.
The Ayatollah runs it together with the Supreme Council. There's a handful. There's maybe a dozen at most. Ahmadinejad, the president, is a mouthpiece, though he's a very dangerous one. And that he was made president indicates the country's moving in a radical direction.
Well, he took the popular vote, right?
Well, the popular fixed vote. He was the pick choice, and he was the guy they wanted to be in there. And today's statements had a degree of boldness that the world should take seriously, because when Hitler says he's going to exterminate the Jews, he meant it. And when Ahmadinejad says he wants to wipe Israel from the face of the earth, he means it.
Well, this book, of course, Black Gold Stranglehold. Jerry Corsi, Craig Smith, thank you both for spending the time on the program.
Great being with you.
George, an honor to be here. Thank you.
For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norris. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.